Bonnie knows when you plant something, it keeps on giving. Growing from friend to neighbor to community. Generations of gardeners have trusted Bonnie for fresh, healthy vegetable and herb plants. Rely on Bonnie for quality plants, help, and support. Bonnie, gardening with you since 1918. BonniePlants.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
What you are about to hear is a special episode of The Food Scene, recorded off-site, now broadcasting live on the heritageradionetwork.org.
I grew up in Sebastopol, California, which is a little rural town in Sonoma County, and my family lived on an apple orchard, and my sort of upbringing was very bucolic, and we had a big vegetable garden and played outside a lot of the time, and
I'm assuming, obviously, you were eating those apples and tending to that garden. Do you remember being kind of, not agrarian, but in the farm at a young age, doing all those things?
Yeah, definitely. Like, my parents didn't work the orchard. Like, that wasn't their job. We had other people come in, and we sold the apples once a year. It was only a couple acres, so it wasn't, a huge amount of apples, but we definitely ate those apples and cooked everything imaginable with them.
Yeah, it's like Forrest Gump with the shrimp, or
yes.
Bubba Gump Shrimp
my gosh.
Company. So what were all the apple things that you cooked?
Apple pie, apple strudel, apple cake, dried apples, applesauce.
was there a point in your life where you're like, no more goddamn apples, I'm done with apples?
Not really, I love apples.
Yeah.
And I'm really picky about my apples, too.
So what are your apples? What are the varieties that you often eat?
So on the orchard, we had Red Delicious, Golden Delicious, Roman Beauty, and Jonathan's. And I think probably Golden Delicious are still my favorite, but you can rarely get them very crisp in the grocery store, so I end up buying Fuji's.
Yeah. What is the flavor profile of all those apples you just mentioned? Because you see an apple, and an apple tastes like an apple. You know, there's red apples and green apples for most, but there's obviously a lot more than just that. So tell me about each specific variety you mentioned, what they kind of taste like.
Oh my gosh, I don't know if I can decipher between them, but there's definitely so much more flavor in an apple that's just been picked. And I think I can also, like, really tell when the apple is perfectly ripe, because I ate a lot of non-ripe apples coming off the trees. Maybe it's ready today. Was not ready. But, yeah, I think it's, like, maybe more of a textural thing, the crispness and the sweetness, maybe even more than, like, the flavors that are different between the different types.
So let's talk about that bucolic living. Explain the scene, because right now, I mean, we're in such beautiful forestry, but what was the land like where you grew up?
So there are also actually a lot of redwood trees, which are native to Northern California, which we have here in Woodside, but it was just a big orchard and surrounded by other orchards, and sort of the property itself was surrounded by redwood trees and redwood groves and bay trees and eucalyptus and I don't know, there's a lot of vineyards also nearby in Sonoma County, but we're also it's near the town of Occidental where we lived, so it's not too far from the coast, so you also get some sort of coastal fog coming in once in a while, like you do here too.
What did your parents do?
My mom owns a dog grooming shop and my dad is a contractor.
Where did your artistic ambition start? Was it through school? Was it through work? Was it through that beautiful setting of Sebastopol?
Yeah, I think all of it. I mean, I have a pretty artistic family. I have a couple relatives who are professional artists, and my parents are really creative people, so I think they always really encouraged that. You know, they always encouraged, you know, us to take classes, and really when it came time for me to think about whether or not I wanted to major in art or start a career in art, they were so supportive and really encouraged that. But growing up, I went to a little country art studio in Sebastopol, where I took classes a couple times a week, and that was really formative. I think it was watercolor classes, mostly watercolor. This woman had a little cottage studio surrounded by this awesome garden and, you know, orchards and vineyards, and I would go after school, and I loved it. And I started going there, I think, probably when I was like 5 years old, and did just a lot of painting growing up. And then, you know, also took a lot of other classes like sculpture and everything. And it wasn't really until college, I think, that I got into photography more.
So all these mediums, what ended up being your muse? Was it nature? Was it food?
Yeah, I mean, I think nature has a big part, plays a big part in it. And you don't really realize that, you know. I guess, you know, moving back here to the woods after being in New York for so many years, it was sort of like this, I don't know, reawakening a little bit for me creatively. And I think it's, in a way, connecting to my roots and the way I grew up. That obviously had a big impact on me. But also food. You know, I wouldn't say that, like, my parents are foodie gourmands, but food was always very much part of the equation. Like, my mom had a huge vegetable garden that we cooked from year-round, and we grew up vegan, actually. So there was always a lot of discussion around, what are we going to make? Because this was the 80s, and there weren't, you know, really good vegan tofu options. It was, like, weird tempeh burgers, and, you know, we made a lot of the veggie burgers from scratch.
What is your family's heritage, and what kind of cuisines did you cook?
So my family's mostly, I'd say mostly Irish, but I don't know, I think it was just sort of California cuisine. There was a doctor who lived in, like, a nutritionist and doctor who lived in Sonoma County, in the 80s that was very influential on my mom and her cooking. She took a lot of cooking classes from him. His name is Dr. McDougall, and, it was sort of like when we were trying to learn about, you know, more vegan recipes, and his whole philosophy was eating dairy-free, meat-free, and very high in vegetables and grains. So I think that definitely influenced the kinds of things that she made for us growing up versus what she grew up eating, which was more like, you know, casseroles and meats and potatoes, probably. She grew up in L.A. Both my parents grew up in L.A. So,
let's talk about work a little bit. So you went through a formative education, which was really laden with the arts. How did you choose school? I mean, how did you transfer that education into the workforce?
So when it came time to choose a college, I ended up choosing UC Santa Barbara because they had a good art program, but also just because I really love the place. I have family in Santa Barbara and grew up going there every summer and just really wanted to be near the ocean. And I think that was another sort of part that was inspiring for me. And also my uncle's, who is an artist, lives there, and he was a source of inspiration for me. But coming out of college, I had studied abroad in Italy, and that was a really formative year. I went to the Academy of Fine Arts in Bologna and studied sculpture. And that was a year I first really got into photography. I got my first real camera that year. And traveled a lot that year all over. I went to India and Africa and all over Europe and just took pictures and would bring them back to my classes and show them. And coming back from that, I had one more year of college and really ended up shooting a lot of food that year. And Bologna is some say the culinary capital of Italy. So I was also shooting food in Italy that year and brought that sort of learning back with me.
Let's talk about the foods of Bologna.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think that it's just bologna, but I think it's actually the hometown of mortadella. Was actually made initially there.
Uh-huh.
What kind of food were you surrounded by around?
So I was vegetarian at that time. So I wasn't sampling a lot of what they had to offer. They have some really beautiful meats and everything, but I lived with four Italian girls who were all in college, and they made pasta every night. like every kind of pasta you can imagine. And I was shocked at how many different kinds of pasta dishes they could come up with.
What shapes did you see?
Oh, every shape, every shape. I mean, it was usually spaghetti, but just like really, really simple pairings with pasta, you know, just like olive oil and red peppers and broccoli or aglio olio peperoncino, you know, like just super simple things. And I think I was attracted that to that kind of simple cooking that just highlights a couple of ingredients.
Did you cook with your family while growing up, or was this one of your first times where you like cooked for yourself?
I know we cooked a lot growing up.
Yeah.
I feel like I was always in the kitchen growing up.
Yeah.
Making really simple vegetable-based dishes still, but yeah, we cooked a lot.
What were some of your favorite vegan dishes in your childhood?
That is a good question.
What were...
Stumping me.
Yeah, let's go back to Italy then. Let's talk about some of the other foods and the markets and the vegetables and the inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, I just... What do I think of when I think of Italy? I think of arugula seemed to be all over Italy, and in a lot of dishes more than I had seen it in California. An eggplant. I think I really got sold on eggplant that year because my roommates cooked with it a lot, and I hadn't really cooked with it that much. Yeah.
What kind of preparations? I mean, how do you now cook eggplant?
I love eggplant now. I cook it a lot. I usually just slice it into thin circles, cover it in olive oil and salt, and roast it until it's brown. Flip it so it's brown on both sides. But that's one of my favorite things for sure.
So Italy was a big influence on both your art and food lives.
Mm-hmm.
What food were you photographing in Italy and why?
I was really doing more conceptual projects surrounding food, sort of still life, you know, scenes that I constructed using mostly produce. So it wasn't as much shooting in restaurants like I did later. But I think just being around all that food and the colors of it and the outdoor markets and just the fresh produce everywhere, the color, I think, was a big source of inspiration.
Still lifes.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of great, you know, Italian masters that did still lifes. Were
mm-hmm.
there any specific people or artists that kind of influence your style?
Mm-hmm. I always love the work of Martin Parr, and he shoots in a documentary style, which is a little bit different than what I'm doing now. I was sort of into that for a while, but he captures the color of food in a really fun way, just sort of out and about in life, not very constructed.
So did you have a specific outlet for this work, or was it just an exploration?
I think my outlet was just school, being able to show it in crit classes and create a portfolio for myself that I thought I could use after I got out of school.
When you put this portfolio together, what was in it? What kind of images? Because I know you've done from straight still life to conceptual.
Mm-hmm. What was in my college portfolio? It was not that good, I'll tell you that. It was sort of portraiture mixed with colorful produce, I think, and even some candy, and I was doing some, I don't know, just bizarre things with egg yolks floating in Windex and crazy stuff. But, you know, I think it wasn't really until grad school that I started to be able to hone in a little bit more on still life and sort of constructing or composing images in a more interesting way.
So let's go to grad school. Where did you go and what were you studying?
Yeah, so I went to grad school at School of Visual Arts in New York. And I think it really helped me focus on food in a way that I hadn't done before. I was a little bit more scattered. And starting out, they sort of set you out to just sort of shoot whatever you're drawn to for a while and then come back with those images. And I ended up coming back with mostly food photos. And so they were sort of like, you know, why don't you stick with this for a while? You don't have to make it your main thing, but, you know, focus on food for a while and we'll see what happens. So I did, and eventually I ended up shooting a cookbook for my thesis with the restaurant run by Will Goldfarb, Room for Dessert, which is in Soho. And I had this idea of, I was really attracted. I think I read about him initially in The New Yorker and just thought, wow, he's doing some amazing creative things surrounding food. And I approached him. I just went into the restaurant one night and said, I'm doing this project. Would you be interested in collaborating? And he was totally into it, and he was really open to it. He ended up being so busy that Bob Pruitt ended up plating most of what I shot. And Pam Young was also working there at the time, and they both really helped me with the project. But my idea was to create a series of diptychs. On one side, it was Will's dessert, and there were these really sort of conceptual, bizarre desserts that had interesting names, and they were based on dreams and trips and just very constructed desserts that were so fascinating and interesting and colorful and full of texture that I wanted to photograph them. And I shot them really simply on black and white backgrounds, just in the little restaurant. I literally shot in the window on the sandwich board because there was no space there. And then using a lot of the same ingredients that he used in those dishes, I then created a series of still life collages to match them. So it was sort of this is what he did with the ingredients, and this is what I did with the ingredients. But it was also a way to show the ingredients that were actually in that dish, because looking at the dish, you might not really know what's in it. And they had fun ingredients like Nerds and Lucky Charms and marshmallows and things like that. So,
do you remember some of the elements of his dishes other than those? I know he made this crazy beet tasting one time, and it was beet four ways, and I can't even...
I don't think I shot that one, yeah. But... he stenciled words on top of, I think, meringue. He had one called Lucky. Actually, I don't even know if the dish was called Lucky, but it had Lucky stenciled on it. And he had, one called Red that had all these different shades of red sort of mixed together. So he was also inspired by color, too, which is perhaps why I was drawn to his desserts a bit.
I like that the stenciling came up, because it's an overlay of text on mm-hmm. food.
Yeah, that's true. I never thought of that.
So you're eventually getting to this point where you're incorporating those two, elements into your mm-hmm. own work. But on top of that, you are very, it's necessary for you to have a hand in what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I know Martin Parr is an amazing documentary photographer, but you really enjoy having a part. Playing a part and showing your hand in the final imagery. Why was it so important for you to have that diptych, to show someone's work and then show your work relative to that?
I think I've always been interested in showing the parts of a whole. So that was my way of showing, sort of deconstructing the whole and showing the parts that go into it. And that's still what I'm doing now. I always seem to think in diptych forms, two images that go together, one that shows the whole and one that shows the parts of the whole. Even now with my blog, that's exactly what I'm doing. I mean, even if I think about, I was obsessed with diagramming sentences when I was in elementary school. I just really breaking down the whole somehow and seeing the parts of it.
Let's talk about Room for Dessert again. You just walked in. You read mm-hmm. about it, and you just walked in, and that's how you began that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
How did you continue that relationship working with Will, and what other restaurants and chefs did you start working with?
Yeah, so my work with Will really was just throughout my thesis project. And then soon after that, I think he moved away, and I sort of lost contact with him a bit. But I was volunteering as a photographer at the James Beard Foundation around that same time, sort of while I was in grad school and coming out of grad school. And I tried to always pick chefs that were based in New York who were, cooking there, so that I could connect a little bit and then reach out to them later and maybe collaborate. I think I got really interested in working with chefs and sort of seeing their process and getting in the kitchen with them a little bit. Although I was always more interested in the finished dish and sort of that beauty shot rather than getting the whole documentary feel of the kitchen and everything.
Let's talk about chefs. I know you have relationships with some. Who are they, and where do they cook, and what do they cook?
Yeah. So coming out of that pastry project that I did with Will, I started reaching out to other pastry chefs. And people were really, really nice about inviting me to come and shoot. And I created this series of work that was all based on pastry. And it was sort of the same idea of pairing... it was sort of the same idea of shooting things in a really minimalistic way, just on white or in black, to really show these desserts as pieces of art or little sculptures almost. So Johnny Uzzini was really nice and invited me to come, and I took a lot of photographs of his wild desserts. And Piché Ong, too, I just reached out to him because I really liked what he was doing, and he let me come to the restaurant and shoot a lot of his dishes. Elizabeth Faulkner, when I was out here in San Francisco, I went and shot with her one day. So I sort of, Francois Payard, I did a whole series on his stuff. In a different way, I was sort of making these collages where I was using pages of magazines and pictures of, like, really ornate interiors, and making it look like the dessert lived there. Sort of the dessert was my subject, so I did a whole series of those with Francois's desserts, and you know, he was amazing and gave me all these desserts to photograph and take back to my studio and create a series of work based on desserts. Yeah, so I think also partially my interest in dessert is not only because of color, but because I was vegetarian at the time and I couldn't try a lot of other things, so desserts were like really exciting to me.
No, it's kind of, I don't often think about the idea that you never really finish with that kind of protein. If you, it's mainly sweet, and sometimes, you know, cheeses, and so vegetarians and vegans love dessert. What are some of your favorite desserts?
Oh man, anything chocolate, like flourless chocolate cake or gelato. I definitely go towards the chocolates more than the fruity things.
Let's talk about cookbooks at that time. What influenced you?
So there were two books that I was looking at a lot during that time, and even wrote about in my thesis as being inspiring to my thesis project. And The Taste of Black is one photo. The Taste of Black is one cookbook that sort of highlights all these different foods that are dark or black, and everything shot on a light box, white background. Very conceptual idea of thinking about food and color together, but black. Concepts and photos in the book are by Bjorn Lindberg, and the recipes are by Jonas Borson. And then another book that uses a lot of color and collage and highlighting ingredients the way I was interested in that is a book by Olivier Rollinger, and it's called Contemporary French Cuisine, and it's 50 recipes inspired by the sea. And some of his ingredients are shot on light table, on white backgrounds, and then I think compiled in Photoshop, which is sort of interesting to look back at that book now and think about how much Photoshop I use in my own work.
Yeah.
And perhaps that was sort of subconsciously moving me in the direction I'm going now.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
you were in New York for years and decided to make a move back out west, close to where you grew up. Tell me about that decision and why Forest Feast was such an important part of that move.
Yeah, so we ended up moving to Northern California because my husband got a job in Silicon Valley in the summer of 2011. And we chose Northern California partially because it was a great job, but also because it was close to my family. And I think moving to Silicon Valley was a little scary for me, coming from Brooklyn, where there's so many creative and interesting and inspiring things going on around you all the time. And coming to Silicon Valley, it felt really suburban, and I was having a hard time imagining myself making that transition. So when we came across an ad for a place to live in a little cabin in the woods, just like 20 minutes outside of Palo Alto, it seemed like kind of a crazy choice, but also an exciting and sort of different choice for starting our new life in California. So we jumped on that and ended up moving to the woods. And it feels very familiar to me because it's a similar terrain to where I grew up. But for Jonathan, I think it was really different. He grew up in Manhattan on the Upper West Side. So, but he loves it. I think he really likes it. And it feels different. And, you know, we thought, we don't have kids. And why not just try it for a little while? So moving to California, you know, we came mostly for his job, and I was starting over. I had, you know, years of freelance clients built up in New York, and coming to California, I was really starting afresh. So I started making a new portfolio, and I thought a nice way to be able to, you know, motivate myself to keep making new work was to start a blog. And I went for Tumblr because of its visual layout, and I just decided to call it the Forest Feast because I was shooting food in the woods. So it really just started as a way for me to make a portfolio. And I was sort of meeting with some different editors in New York and showing them my work. And it was this really slick, minimalistic, light box looking, you know, fine dining food that was not really the aesthetic they were going for. And they really wanted a more earthy, rustic feel, like California feel to their the food dishes. So I was like, okay, I can do that. You know, didn't really know any chefs out here yet to work with. So I was like, I'll just cook. And, you know, I'd always styled a lot of my own work. So I started collecting vintage dishes and props at flea markets, and started just shooting what I thought, you know, would sort of have that earthy vibe. And it also very much fit with the surroundings that I was now in. So, yeah, that was the way the Forest Feast sort of came about. And then, yeah.
So let's talk about these surroundings. Explain where we are.
Yeah, so we're sitting on the deck right now, looking out over a sea of redwood trees. I shoot a lot outside here, actually entirely outside, which was a total change from the way I was working in New York. I always shot with lights that I brought everywhere. And actually, Michael, shooting with you at Encanto when I first arrived and watching you shoot with natural light, I was like blown away. I had never thought of shooting with only natural light, really, which sounds bizarre, but I just brought my lights everywhere. I think that's because the way I was sort of trained to shoot in school. But watching you shoot with natural light, I thought, oh, you know, after you were done with that cookbook shoot, I thought, I can try that. So I came back and I started shooting outdoors. And the light here is really amazing. I think the light is partially what inspires me to shoot here. And in the morning, often it's really foggy. There's just a big white sheet of fog out there. And, you know, it burns off around 11 or so. But it's like a softbox in the sky, right? So really soft shadows. And late in the day, I end up shooting a lot, like, late in the day after the sun sort of sinks down behind the mountain a little bit. And there's this sort of, like, nice golden light outside. But I just walk around the property. The property's not huge. I don't know exactly, half acre or something like that. But I end up just, you know, walking around the property and looking for logs that have fallen, or a mossy spot that's green from the rain, or, you know, the deck. I use sometimes like the hardwood on the deck or whatever. So I'm just always looking at the ground, looking for new spots. I feel like any future place I live, I will take a good look at the ground before I move in.
So these surroundings, which are just epic, just a wonderful place to be creative. How do you pair the food with that? Because you have so much visual inspiration. What is your food inspiration?
Yeah, so really, I just started cooking whatever came in my CSA box every week. John got a CSA box that was delivered to his office, and he would bring it home every Tuesday. And I was working from home, trying to figure my life out, and I had this bag of beautiful produce, and so I just started shooting it and cooking things with it, and that was really the inspiration for the recipes, and I've sort of stuck with that. It's mostly based on local produce.
So talk about some of the produce that you got here that you didn't, you know...
You know, we had a CSA in Brooklyn too, and you don't get it all year round the way you do in California. So, you know, we're getting like beautiful tomatoes and citrus and avocados. We get avocados every week pretty much because they're grown in the Central Valley, and, you know, persimmons and pomegranates and eggplant, just everything. Of course, the summer is more bountiful, but really we get a good amount of produce all year round. Much more than in Brooklyn. So, you know, in a way that sort of, for my blog readers, that could be a little misleading when I'm using avocados in winter. But I don't claim to be a purist. I think it's nice to start with seasonal local produce, but, you know, I'm totally fine with buying a tomato in the winter if I really need it for something. So I don't want to be too strict on that, but I think it's a nice place to start if you can buy local produce.
So let's start from the beginning. As far as recipes go, what was your first post and recipe on Forestries?
So the first couple of weeks of posting were not even really recipes. I was just creating these still lifes, sort of with the woods as a backdrop, and I think my first two actual recipes, you could see like the first few posts I was trying to figure things out a little bit, and then I did this one post. I remember it very clearly. It was roasted acorn squash. And I was looking for a place to shoot this roasted squash. It was the finished dish, and I'm walking all over the property trying to find, like, a good spot to set it. And I came upon this log, like an old log of a tree that had been taken down. And you could see all the rings of the wood, and they were sort of like this beautiful orange... you know, brownish color in these rings. And then I looked at my acorn squash, and it was like the same colors, this round shape with these same shades of orange and brown. And I thought, aha, I can put the acorn squash right there. And I shot it, and I was like, that's the shot. So then I thought, oh, what else can I do this with? So I do sort of try to think about the colors in a dish and the textures and try to match them with what I find on, you know, the forest floor.
Let's talk about conceptually how you photograph and how you overlay with watercolor. There seems to be a recipe, an ingredient, a recipe shot, and finished dish. Mm-hmm. How do you compose those two things?
Yeah, so I always shoot the recipe first, which is usually displayed on the left-hand side. So I take all the ingredients that will be in the dish, and I lay them all out on the ground or on a piece of wood or... on a piece of fabric, and I shoot it from overhead, and I think about leaving enough room in between things for text and sort of placing things in an order that will allow me to write the recipe on it later. And then I take all those ingredients inside and I cook it, and then I make the dish, and then I come back out and I start walking around the property looking for a place to set that plate. And then I take it all into the studio and put it all into Photoshop, and then I add my handwriting using a tablet right into an empty layer in Photoshop. So my handwriting is overlaid right on top of the image. And then I like to have a watercolor title to go with each recipe post. And it's the same format in the book. And I choose a font that I feel like sort of matches the dish and the colors of the dish and everything. And I paint the watercolor title, the letters. And then I usually paint a couple of the ingredients to highlight alongside, and so that serves as like a title, and then the sort of diagram is below, and then the finished dish follows.
Let's talk about some of those dishes. What were some of your favorite recipes that you've developed?
Oh, I think one of my favorites is... Well, I just told you this the other day. So, I think one of my favorites is the eggplant tacos. And it's basically just circles of eggplant that have been browned by being roasted in the oven. And then you put a piece of brie and a piece of cilantro in there. And you squeeze it like a little mini taco. And that's it. But that's like one of my personal favorite things to eat. And, you know, it was inspired by the eggplant and the cilantro that came in my CSA. But also sometimes I'm just like, what can I do with what I have in my fridge? And I happened to have brie in the fridge that day and I tried it with it and I was like, ooh, this is good. So that's stuck and it's going in my book.
You have a protocol of how you work, but you break rules when it comes to recipes a little bit. How do you cook? I mean, you cut things at different angles and you do all these things that a lot of people wouldn't think to do. Is it visually driven? Is it culinary driven?
I think it's definitely visually driven. In cutting things, I'm often looking for shapes that I think will look nice together being plated. But I think I'm definitely thinking about flavors that go with each other. And, you know, I don't have a culinary training background. I'm definitely a home cook. And that's why my recipes are really simple. A lot of them are salads or simple vegetable dishes or things that don't even need cooking. It's just sort of a combining of a couple different ingredients. But I try to find flavors and ingredients that I think work well together and might be slightly surprising, but that I think are tasty.
Let's talk about some of those pairings. What were like aha moments?
Oh, so I got a lot of avocados and oranges one week in the CSA, probably in the winter. And I wanted to make an orange salad, and so I was slicing these oranges into big round circles, and then I had these big avocados that were sort of the same size, and I thought, oh, like oranges and avocados, that citrus flavor could go nice. And then I thought about cutting the avocado into circles to match the circular shape of the citrus, and then I sort of layered them to see the green and the orange next to each other, and then just like a little bit of herbs and salt and pepper and olive oil. And it was pretty good. I tried it and I was like, oh, I'm going to shoot this. I'm going to make another one and shoot it for the blog.
Oh, so sometimes you make things, eat them, and go like, shoot, I should have put that on the blog.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Give me a couple more dishes, recipes that are in the book.
Another really simple one is just fresh figs sprinkled with goat cheese, honey, and red pepper flakes and mint. And that's it. Just really simple.
You keep on saying that's it, but there's so much work that goes into just making it right, you know, making that dish conceptually work. So
yeah,
it's a lot more than that's it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I like the idea that it's, you know, simple things that anyone can just chop and put together, and it doesn't have to look, you know, perfect in any way. It's just those flavors going together. So I feel like it's simple. There's not a lot of time, you know, involved in chopping those few things. But yeah, I mean, I did, you know, taste it and eat it and try it with some different types of cheese and herbs and everything. But I want things to be easy and approachable and, you know, look pretty, but in a way that doesn't look intimidating so that people will actually try and make them.
Because it's not just personally for you to, and you know, look at, be enamored by and eat. You do some entertaining, and how important is it for food to be easy to make and easy to eat in that kind of setting?
Yeah, it's definitely important. I mean, I'm always trying to think of things that can be served at room temperature because it's so hard to serve things hot, especially when you have a crowd coming over. So a lot of my dishes can be served at room temperature. Was that your question?
Yeah, that works. Cocktails.
Cocktails, yeah. So I think it's fun to serve one sort of special cocktail in addition to beer and wine when you're having a party, and even if it's just like in a pitcher. But yeah, I have a whole cocktail section on the blog and on the book and in the book. And, you know, it's pretty simple stuff, but I try to do some... you know, maybe a little bit different stuff that anyone could do at home, like freezing lemon and mint into ice cubes or freezing blueberries and using them instead of ice. Like something just a little cute and easy that makes it feel special and different and clever.
Any ingredients that you're just totally in love with right now?
Persimmons. Persimmons are everywhere right now in the Bay Area, and a friend of mine has a huge tree and she brought me a big bag of them the other day. And I make everything with persimmons in the fall. I went a little overboard last year, I think. I had somebody write me and be like, okay, we're done with persimmons. We can't get them where we live, and we're done. But specifically the Fuyu persimmons, because you can eat them with the skin on when they're not ripe. You know, they can be like a little crunchy like an apple and not leave that weird pasty taste in your mouth. But I have them both like in sweet dishes and also like in savory dishes. Like the last two Thanksgivings I've made a persimmon salad that has cilantro and onions and pomegranates and avocado. That's really good.
And they're beautiful.
Yeah, they're so pretty. I probably just initially loved them because of the color.
Other ingredients? I mean, obviously avocados are absurd here.
Yeah, I mean, I get a lot of cilantro in the CSA, and I know people don't really like cilantro, so I end up swapping that out with basil sometimes. I think that's interchangeable. But other ingredients.
We talked about...
Sorry.
You know, photography, we talked a little about watercolor and your process. What equipment do you use?
I use a Nikon D800. And most of the time I use a 50mm lens. And I have a longer, like, macro 105 lens too. But I just use, like, one reflector or no reflector if it's foggy. And that's it. That's really it.
Natural light is amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing.
And it's so varied too. Obviously, we're sitting right now and it's beaming, you know, into our faces. But... again, I never thought of the haze, the cloud, as the softbox. But I always tell clients, I'm like, oh, yeah, let's shoot this day. They're like, it's going to be rainy. I'm like, yeah, I know. That's good. You don't want direct sunlight. You want a little bit of, you know, soft.
Totally.
Anything else that you'd like to add, extend?
Well, I think this idea of having a food blog was not something that I set out to do. And I've been happily surprised by readers' feedback, and it's encouraged me to keep sharing recipes and even delivered this project of a book to me, which is amazing. But I like the community that's sort of built around a food blog, and I think that's been surprising because I think one of my main motivations is, or sort of goals, is to be able to create community through food. And I really hope that my recipes look... pretty enough and simple enough that people can actually go home and make them and then share them with people. So that's sort of one of my driving forces, is the idea of people getting together and trying these things, cooking and eating them.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.